Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. Are there secret courts operating in Massachusetts? The Boston Globe says there are, in the form of closed-door hearings before a single court official where thousands of criminal charges can and do disappear. The paper analyzed data from what are known as show cause hearings, which are held before court clerks, and the paper says its analysis shows an arbitrary part of our state's criminal justice system. Globe Spotlight reporter Nicole Dunca joins us to talk about this. Nicole, welcome to Radio Boston.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Also on the line is Joe Simons, a criminal defense attorney in Boston. Thanks for being here, Joe.
Hi, thanks for having me.
During our conversation, also, we're going to hear from a member of the Governor's Council, Terrence Kennedy, and we will talk with him as well. But first, Nicole, I want to start with you. Why are you calling these secret courts?
Yeah, so in Massachusetts and around the country, generally criminal proceedings for adults are always public. So for the minute a person is arraigned on a charge in the courtroom, you or I can go into that courtroom and we can look up the case. But in Massachusetts, if you're accused of a crime and haven't been arrested, you generally have a right to this hearing. That's completely hidden from the public. I can't go into the hearing, and it's very different from every aspect of the open court that, you know, we see in courthouses across the country.
But this is pre-arrest.
Yeah.
Pre-arraignment, yes. Pre-arrest.
Sorry, not pre-arrest. It's usually for people who haven't been arrested. So okay. It's pre-arraignment.
Okay. So give us an example of what you found here in terms of the criminal charges that are heard in these show cause hearings.
So it's a huge range. I mean, in general, misdemeanors are the ones that are going to go to this. But in our story, we actually found that, you know, one out of 12 of them were felonies. So there are some serious charges that were going into these hearings. For example, the beginning of our story, it's an aggravated assault claim in a domestic violence case. There is a motor vehicle homicide case. And so these are the kinds of cases that end up being within these closed hearings without any accountability.
So how would it be that these cases, when you're talking about charges like motor vehicle homicide, that there wouldn't have been an arraignment already, that they already wouldn't have been slated to go through traditional court as opposed to a show cause hearing? Like, who makes that determination that these cases might be fit to go to a show cause hearing as opposed to a traditional judge?
Yeah, and so in some cases, the police department might set it up for a hearing instead of going straight to arraignment because they find that the person isn't a flight risk or a danger to other people, for example. So they're saying, oh, there might be some questions about it, so they might send it to these kind of hearings. And in general, if you are accused of a misdemeanor and you haven't been arrested, you know, some people will know that you have a right to this hearing. So a lot of defense attorneys, they might see that their client is going to go straight to arraignment, but they can say, hold on one second, we're actually going to set this up for a hearing.
Well, let's ask our defense attorney who we have on the line, Joe Simons. Does that typically happen if you see that you have a client in the system here? Do you try to divert a case to a clerk magistrate?
Absolutely. If it's a misdemeanor that was committed outside of the police officer's presence, then you have a right with some slight exceptions, for example, domestic violence cases. But, sometimes that happens where the police make an arrest, even bring somebody to court, and then you realize that the person actually has a statutory right not to be arraigned before a clerk magistrate's hearing. So a lot of those cases, judges agree to dismiss. And some of them never come back. Some of them do come back and get screened out. And then some of them come back and the clerk issues a complaint.
Do you think that these show cause hearings are problematic, Joe?
I don't think so. And I think they serve a good purpose. So for one thing, in Massachusetts, anybody can go into a courthouse, into a clerk's office, and apply for a criminal complaint against anybody else. There's really no bar and almost no oversight to that, except that they have these clerk magistrate hearings. So the clerk magistrates serve a function where they screen out cases that really have no business being in criminal court, or many times there isn't probable cause that a crime was committed and somebody's simply seeking redress that, you know, should be better served in civil court. Sometimes the police, despite doing their best efforts and responding to calls, they have to make split-second decisions and don't always have the ability to analyze whether or not a case really should be going to court, whether there's enough probable cause.
Right, but I think the article, and you know, Nicole, certainly correct me if I'm wrong here, but it brings up that there's an arbitrary system here. What if you don't know about such a thing as show cause hearings? What if you have not hired a private attorney who knows about such things? And you may not have the same opportunity to have your case heard by a clerk magistrate, and you are going to go before a traditional judge where there likely will be something in public, at least, or possibly a criminal record, and that's very different from what happens in these hearings. Does this result in a different system for people, depending on who's in the know or who can afford a lawyer to fight it?
Unfortunately, yes, that is definitely true. And I can't tell you how many people don't call me until after they've tried to go to the clerk's hearings by themselves. I've had people call me and say, oh, I've got this invitation to court. I don't know if I need to go or not. I don't think a lot of people realize what they really are, even people who are summoned to go to these hearings, because, you know, the way some of them are worded are, well, you can appear, and if you want to have an attorney, you can bring one. I think people would be should be better advised of the consequences and the chances that they have, to protect their rights.
When you say invited to court, I don't think anybody gets invited and willingly, right? Wants to
no,
go
but I've had a lot of
court.
Clients say that. I've been invited to a clerk's hearing, and I have a conversation with the clerk and the officer. And then, you know, then they say things on the record, too. I mean, so then to their detriment, everything's under oath, so they might say something that inadvertently could be, deemed some sort of admission or quasi-admission against their rights.
But you're saying that these are on the record. But, Nicole, what you found is there's no recording of these proceedings, or these are not public.
It's definitely not a requirement to be recorded. They're within the guidelines of the district courts. They say it's recommended, but we called a lot of courts. And really, it's kind of a toss-up whether you get into a district court where it's actually recorded. There certainly aren't public transcripts for anyone. I mean, some people have compared this to grand jury proceedings, but those are really different. Those are with juries of citizens who are making these decisions, and their transcripts are sometimes they're usually recorded, those kinds. And so it's a really different case. And I think you really hit the nail on the head when you're saying that there were these big disparities. I mean, we were looking at places that just had completely different standards of justice. You know, you go to a court like Chelsea, and only 18% of those cases have charges issued. But then you go to Worcester, and 80% of those charges would issue. And when you look at racial disparities in some individual courts, I mean, you see some really troubling things. We have a statistic from Brookline Court. And so about 80% of the white defendants who went to show cause hearings could leave without a charge, but only 45% of minorities do. And so, you know, I can see why people may say this is a way of screening, but without any kind of open hearing, you know, you don't have people who are able to study why these disparities exist and how to change them.
Right. But is this a system, though, that, as Joe says, is a way to sort of weed out frivolous cases and perhaps improve the efficiency to a certain degree of the criminal justice system?
I think there will be people who argue about that. I don't think that there's necessarily, within our story, we're saying this entire system should be abolished. There's a really big difference between not having these hearings at all and having these hearings, but having them open so that there can be people coming into these hearings to give some oversight. I think a lot of people would agree that oversight is good for everyone, defendants, people who are involved in this, even for, you know, the magistrates. Like, we can see the trends in some of these disparities, and we can have records about things that might have gone wrong in individual cases.
Well, let's bring in Terrence Kennedy, who's a member of the Governor's Council, in on this, because the Governor's Council approves the appointment of clerk magistrates. Welcome to Radio Boston, Mr. Kennedy.
Thank you, Deb, and thank you for having me on.
So what do you make of this investigation into these so-called, quote-unquote, secret courts?
Well, I think the term secret is somewhat disingenuous. They're not secret courts. They're confidential hearings, and I think there's a big difference between a confidential hearing and a secret court. You have to keep in mind that a lot of people are charged with crimes by civilians. The civilian complaints, any civilian can bring a complaint, as Joe indicated, that are completely and totally 100% innocent of any crime. People who have, there's not even probable cause to issue a complaint against them. And if you open these proceedings up where a complaint doesn't issue, well, maybe the person doesn't end up with a criminal record, but they're going to end up somewhere on a public record. You know, you can Google people's names today. There's going to be somebody like one of you folks or like Nicole in the room that's going to be writing an article about the hearing, and people are going to end up with some kind of record, even though if it's not a formal one. And criminal justice reform today, we're trying to go in the opposite direction. We're trying to, you know, where possible, keep people out of the criminal justice system, and where possible, you know, make it so that this information isn't available so they can get jobs, so they can get housing, et cetera.
But what do you make of the point in the article and the point that Nicole was just talking about regarding discrepancies from one court to another, when charges are dismissed, when not, the fact that there's not even a standardized method of training for clerk magistrates? 40% of the clerks and their assistants in this Globe Review did not have law degrees. I mean, there's not a lot of diversity. Right. There are disparities. I mean, what do we do about that?
I disagree that there was not training for clerk magistrates and assistant clerks. The trial court does conduct trainings for clerk magistrates and assistant clerk magistrates periodically. So I do disagree with that point.
I just meant training. A standardized level of training for all clerk magistrates.
Well, that's what it is. It's a standardized level of training. They hold various trainings throughout the year.
There are few educational requirements.
Nicole is saying it better than I am. Few educational requirements for a clerk magistrate who's deciding matters of law. And so aside from that, though,
if you're talking about lawyer versus non-lawyer, I'll be glad to address that. I think that I've been, like Joe, I've been a criminal defense lawyer for many years. I've been a criminal defense lawyer for 35 years. And I have dealt with many, many clerk magistrates that were attorneys and many that were not. Mm-hmm. And some of the best clerk magistrates that I've dealt with have been non-attorneys.
But what do we do to make sure that the system is more uniform, I guess, is the thrust of this question here.
In what respect? I mean, with respect to recording hearings, that's something that could be discussed and certainly wouldn't be a bad idea. I've attended many clerk magistrates hearings where they are recorded. I don't see that as a particular issue. And by the way, the statute allows for any party to either bring in a recording device or a stenographer, which I've done. I've brought in stenographers into clerk magistrates hearings before when they were somewhat serious matters.
As a result of this report, do you think the Governor's Council would consider making any changes or anything?
Well, the Governor's Council doesn't have any jurisdiction over making changes with the way a particular system works within the court. We approve the clerk magistrates themselves when the Governor nominates one, and we have to make sure that they're qualified. And when you look at who's going to be a clerk magistrate, it's not just about whether they happen to have particular legal background, because I think that can be made up with a great deal of experience. So, for example, if you had an assistant clerk magistrate who worked in the court system for many years, they might be qualified. But a big part of their job goes beyond that. They have to be good managers. They're managing the clerk's office, some of whom have 50, 60, 70 employees. Mm-hmm. Some are smaller, but you have to be a good manager as well, and I think that's an important part of the job.
Nicole, wondering, what's the reaction been to the story?
I think we've heard from a lot of people who were surprised that this even existed. I mean, I actually called all 50 states to see if there was anything even remotely similar. And many of the prosecutors and the court officials that I talked to said, no, I've never heard of anything like that. It's really surprising. On our end, we've heard from other people who've gone through some of these hearings, and we're glad that we were shedding light on it.
Mm-hmm. And so in terms of any action that might be taken or any changes, still too early to tell?
Yeah, I mean, that is something that I think legislators can look into. I mean, this is in fact something that the trial court itself could actually make some action or make some changes on, because this isn't actually codified directly into law. The idea of these hearings being secret came from an SJC Supreme Court decision. So it's not actually something that is codified into law.
Okay. We should say we did get a statement from trial court Chief Justice Paula Carey saying that the role of these hearings and clerk magistrates is consistent with criminal justice reform efforts recently in Massachusetts. Right. So it doesn't look like there would be changes anytime soon. I'm sorry that we are out of time because I know we could continue this conversation, but I want to say thank you to Nicole Dunca, who's a Boston Globe Spotlight reporter, Joe Simons, a criminal defense attorney, and Terry Kennedy, attorney and member of the Governor's Council. Thanks to all of you for being with us. To read the piece, go to bostonglobe.com. It's called Inside Our Secret Courts. Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Deborah Becker, and this is Radio Boston.